The Disappearance of Tina Martini. The novel begins with a clipping from the newspaper. Missing handicapped teen girl found dead. An early morning hiker walking along a path in the woods found 14-year-old Christine Martini's lifeless body exactly 2 weeks after she was abducted. He recognized the yellow t-shirt, blue shorts, and pink sneakers she had on the last time her mother saw her. Her fully clothed corpse was hidden from view behind one of the bridges on Henry Avenue in Roxborough. Police have begun a citywide manhunt for her killer. Philadelphia Evening Bulletin, August 15, 1960. Monday, August 1, 1960. Chapter 1. Mom and Dad blew up again this morning, Tina thought. Things are always tense, but sometimes they lose control. He shouted at her, and she screamed back. When he left for work, Mom was shaking. I thought she was going to cry, but she didn't. She just looked at me. Maybe it's my fault. I think Mom and Dad both wish I'd never been born. I think I wish that, too, but what can I do? After breakfast, Mom put the radio in the front window and turned it on low. Then she took me out to the porch. It wasn't cool, but there was a breeze. Mom sits on the porch with me a lot, but never talks to me. She just shuts her eyes and listens to the radio. Mom says the music relaxes her, but I don't see how. It's loud and twangy. People sing words I don't understand, but she seems to. I know that because sometimes she sings along in a low voice. Dad doesn't pay any attention to me at all. He's never hit me, like he's hit Tony or Ralphie, when they've been bad. Sometimes I wish he would hit me. Then at least he'd be paying attention to me. Vicky mostly ignores me, too. You would think that your older sister would take an interest in you and help you get used to being a teenager. But now that she's graduated from high school and has a job, she's too busy, I guess. Chapter 2. On the hot and humid August morning in the Germantown section of the city of Philadelphia, Annette Martini and her daughter Tina sat on the front porch of their brick house on Hansbury Street at Kaiser. The house was at the end of a row. The porch was concrete. Concrete steps led down to the sidewalk. The wooden porch railing had been painted dark green years ago, but the color had faded. In some places, the paint had flaked off. The spindles were once white, but were now faded from exposure to sunlight and dirty from the exhaust of passing cars. Hansbury wasn't a busy street, but there were a lot of houses close together, which meant a lot of families, most of whom had cars. Old trees lined the street, but there was no tree directly in front of the Martini house, nor did they have a car. Annette sat in a wooden, high-backed porch rocker with a sagging rattan seat and back. It was painted the same green as the porch railing and was similarly faded. Tina sat on an old kitchen chair that her father had picked up off someone's trash and carried home. The radio played a rock and roll song, but not loud enough to bother the neighbors. Annette was resting her eyes and hoping for a breeze. Through the open window, they heard the phone ringing. Annette opened her eyes. She was a short, wiry woman. Her 20 years as a hard-working homemaker were taking their toll on her body, and she had aches and pains most of the time. Annette grunted and slowly got out of her chair. She walked to the screen door and opened it. As soon as her mother was inside the house, Tina made a decision. 10 minutes passed before Annette finished talking on the phone. She went outside and found Tina's chair empty. She knew the child hadn't come into the house. Annette hung over the porch railing and looked down the sidewalk in both directions, but didn't see Tina. It was hot, and even small exertions took real effort. Plus, she was tired. Just living her life took effort. She sat back down in her chair. I'll just wait a while, she thought. After 2 hours, Tina still hadn't returned. Annette went inside and called the police, but she didn't call her husband Rocco at work. He was hard to get hold of because he drove a Bond Bread delivery truck all day. Then Annette went back out to the porch and sat down again. She assumed that by the time her husband's workday ended, Tina would be back at home, and he would never find out that she'd briefly gone missing. Chapter 3. Tina was used to the route she and her mother took when they pulled their rickety shopping cart as they walked to the Acme supermarket on Germantown Avenue. She hurried along Hansbury Street, easily crossed several smaller streets and approached busy Green Street. Three little girls were playing hopscotch on the sidewalk in front of a row house near the corner. Tina ignored them as she walked by. She was focused on the overgrown lot across Green Street and the narrow path through the tall weeds that led to the back of the Acme parking lot a block away. "Once I'm in the weeds, no one will see me," she thought. "I'll be free." Tina never thought to ask herself if freedom meant anything more than escape. Chapter 4. As Tina approached the corner of Hansberry and Green Streets, a powder blue 1951 Studebaker coupe was slowly moving toward her on Green Street. The driver was Maggie Fallon. She was 28 years old and had close-cropped blonde hair, a round face, and a pudgy body. Maggie had just left the Sisters of St. Joseph Convent behind the St. Francis of Assisi School on Logan Street. She had gone there to end her time as Sister Mary Margaret. Until recently, Maggie would never have imagined she wouldn't want to be a nun for her entire life. Then something happened to change the way she saw things. Her mother Dolores died suddenly 2 months before the end of the recent school year. She had been living alone since her husband Dan died several years earlier. Without warning, Dolores collapsed in her kitchen. Her neighbor Florence found her the next day. Florence called the convent and Sister Mary Margaret was summoned out of her classroom. When she heard the news, Maggie felt her life shift cataclysmically. The doctors told Maggie that a brain hemorrhage had caused her mother's death. She likely died slowly and painfully, but the doctors didn't mention that to Maggie. They saw no need to upset her further. After the funeral, Maggie took some time to reflect on what had happened and realized that losing her mother had turned her life upside down. Although she was a member of a religious order in which the women referred to each other as sisters, she suddenly felt alone in the world. At the end of the school year, Maggie told the Mother Superior she wanted to quit. The Mother Superior tried patiently to counsel her to reconsider, but Maggie knew she couldn't stay. Her grief was too overwhelming and would distract from anything she tried to do in the future. There was no way she could again stand in front of a chalkboard and try to teach children. As of this morning, she was no longer a servant of Christ. Now, she was just Maggie Fallon. Maggie couldn't help but feel guilty that she had somehow failed her mother. Now that she was no longer a nun, Maggie also felt she had failed God. She was hoping that, once her shock and grief wore off, she would figure out what to do with the rest of her life. But as of this moment, Maggie Fallon didn't have much of a reason for living. As her car neared Hansberry Street, she noticed someone at the corner. The slender, frail-looking, dark-haired girl was wearing a yellow top, blue shorts, and pink sneakers. She appeared to be trying to cross the street. Cars were zipping by, and the girl seemed overwhelmed. Maggie slowed down. The child looked at her car. Maggie recognized the girl's face. "Tina Martini!" she yelled. Tina froze on the curb. Maggie flipped the turn signal and swerved onto Hansberry Street. Then she parked and ran toward Tina. "You might not remember me. I was your fifth-grade teacher, Sister Mary Margaret." Tina looked puzzled but didn't try to move away. "It's okay. Do you need help?" Maggie asked. Tina didn't look at Maggie. "My parents hate me," she mumbled. "Come with me," Maggie replied. She took Tina's hand. They crossed the street. After they got into the car, Maggie started it. Tina sat quietly on the bench seat. She wondered what was happening and felt bewildered. "Should I have gotten in the car?" she thought. "Who is this lady? Where are we going? I didn't ask her to take me anywhere. Does she know where I live? Is she taking me back? What if I don't want to go back?" Tina turned to look at Maggie. Then she looked out the window. "She just turned at the end of the block," Tina thought. "Now she's turned again. And again. She's not taking me back. But where is she taking me? What have I done?"